United Nations educational, scientific, and cultural organizations event, Dubrovnik Revisited, A Time for Peace. Prepared and presented by Haiju Narasimha.
What happens to a place, a people, when there's been war? It's almost 3 years now since hostilities ceased around Dubrovnik. The 12th century city once hailed as the Venice of the East. Life is gradually coming back to Dubrovnik and its surroundings. It is as if the city was slowly awakening from a long, numbing slumber. The youth orchestra has once again begun rehearsals for an open-air concert to be held in the main street of Stavin. And the market square near the Rector's Palace is now a place of renewed activity. But despite these signs of life, in the height of the summer tourist season, the city centre is strangely devoid of tourists. Croatian does not mingle with Italian, French, German, Spanish, English the way it used to. The war has turned the tourists away, and 3 years after it ended, Dubrovnik's economy, almost totally dependent on tourism, lies shattered. Because of the lack of funds, very little has been achieved by way of restoration. Many of the city's precious monuments, hit by shells or mortar fire, still stand in a sorry state of disrepair. This is the case of Dubrovnik's famous Franciscan monastery, where I talked to Ivana Budzilev, who in a purely voluntary capacity is in charge of culture at the city government. And to begin with, I asked her to describe the scene around us.
It is a rather sad scene, a scene that made people cry the seventh day after the bombardment when they went around to see what happened with their own town. Now we are looking at the shelling that damaged such beautiful columns ornamented in the 16th century and even before. We are looking at the wounds, I would say, and we still don't understand why did they do that. What target do they think they'll find by bombarding such a beauty?
So the monastery is still under restoration. We can see the columns have been boarded up. There are a few columns that have now been restored. How long do you think this work is going to take?
Right now, in this part of the monastery, I think it will be a long work, because not only the columns are destroyed and it will be a hard work, every detail has to be reconstructed, but the roof of the church is damaged and the library roof is damaged. And when I say the library, this is very important for us, because the Franciscan Library is one of the oldest libraries in Dubrovnik, where there are several incunabulas and very old editions. Therefore, it is a priority to do the roofing first, so that we can bring back the books at their position, because in Dubrovnik there's no safe place for the books. The place where they are is not so good for the books.
You have described these shell holes as the wounds that are carried by the monuments. The problem is that the wounds of people are carried within them, in their heads and in their hearts. What has the post-war situation been like?
It is rather difficult to answer that. We will never know how many wounds, psychological ones, people are carrying and what are the impressions. You know, myself, I did think that I will completely forget the details of the bombardment and start working so hard that this war won't even affect my life. But in fact, we are all affected by it. By post-war traumas that we can see with the old people, children especially, and we are now trying really hard with psychologists to work with them to make them forget what they've seen or what they've lived through. We were never able to understand that this is going to be one of the major problems afterwards.
Tell me, what are the kind of traumas that children suffer from?
You have some children that were watching, for example, the shelling of the old harbor and boats burning in the night of the 6th. And children at school are still drawing burning heads, or they really start having some other traumas, seeing their own houses burnt. This is the problem that will have to be dealt with on the several levels.
Refugees are part of what is known as the automatic fallout of war. People fleeing in huge numbers, leaving behind their homes, their possessions. Most refugees, almost by definition, are women, children, and old people. Hotel Libertas was once one of the most prestigious tourist complexes in the Dubrovnik region, with a stunning view of the Adriatic Sea and the coastal islands. On the 6th of December, a shell ripped through the hotel, setting it on fire. Its roof leaks. The refugee children who now live there have scribbled on its once immaculate walls. Its interior smells musty and dank. Over 500 people live there now, some waiting for their homes to be rebuilt in the surrounding countryside, others for news of their brothers, husbands, or fathers fighting on a faraway front. Jenny Hansen, who lost her job in tourism after the city's economy collapsed, set up Desha, a center for women refugees, where they can learn skills, earn some money, and above all, find a sympathetic and helpful milieu where they can come to grips with their tragedy.
Almost years, we were without any activities. And there were so many refugees and displaced coming every day to our cities, and they stayed in the hotel. They were lodged there and they received their meals, but nothing else. So we decided to do something more radical, let's say, because before we were collecting our clothes in our homes trying to give to the refugees, and beginning of the aggression, we were writing letters, protests. And then we started with one workshop in Hotel Libertas. The hotel was full of refugees, and they gave us one room. And we took a lot of old clothes. We brought some scissors from our homes, and we tried to do something new and useful from that old clothes. Our idea it was that women, they have to work, because with work they can return their dignity back. We realized that, for example, from those old things we cannot make beautiful things, but we can make rugs, we can make beds, slippers. It was also education for them, that they can learn, they don't have to throw it away, because maybe after the war it will be no more help. So that action succeeded. First we got about 3 women, then 4, then 6, 10, 50 women in that small place in the hotel. We formally registered our organization, called Desha. Desha is a name, female name from our region, especially in the Dubrovnik region. For us it was a little bit symbolic, because, you see, we said that all the women are victims of the war. Those who were forced to leave their home, those who were raped, and those who are in Dubrovnik who suffer under the siege so many months, and who are left alone at home, and they are struggling very hard to survive with their children. So always it was the woman who took very important, very strong role. She tried to regroup the family and to keep family together, and she tried to survive. She tried to rebuild their burnt home. Who remained in those burnt villages? Women. So because of it, we took the name Desha for our organization. Now we have 7 workshops from Tartas until island of Korsula, where we have about 350 participants, women. We are trying to provide some activities as a working therapy, for example, sewing, knitting, weaving. This is very interesting also that in that project involved local jobless women from the area of Dubrovnik and from Dubrovnik, because if you put all those categories together, then you minimize antagonism. And they learn from each other. And, you know, there is one friendship. And the workshop is a nice place for them. It's a comfort place where they seek a comfort and a warmth, you see. And they find they make friends.
Shilapi is a small village in the Konavle Valley, some 20 kilometers from Dubrovnik. The 600 villagers who lived here all fled during the war. They have not been able to return, for every single building, with the exception of the church, was burned down with firebombs. The villagers have lost everything, and the government, except for money, has not been able to rebuild all their homes. Like other refugees, they too live in hotels. But every day they come to their land to rest the fields, and every Sunday they come to the little church in the village square. The women wear the traditional Croatian costumes. As Dubrovka Zirko, the documentation and public relations manager of the Dubrovnik Rehabilitation Institute, explains.
Female costumes from the Carnival area are very, very known in Croatia and recognized as among the most beautiful in Croatia. These costumes, which is very interesting, are very popular among the women in the Carnival area. They like to wear traditional costumes even every day. There is a difference between costumes of married women and those who are not, especially what they have on their heads. Kvas is typical and it is a part of the costume of the married woman, whereas the girls wear a kind of bonnet kind of hat, which says exactly that the girl is still free.
Now, what are the problems of this area? Where have all the people who live here gone? Because the houses are all without roofs, without doors, without windows. Everything that could be burnt down has been burnt down, and all we see are just empty shells of houses, just walls standing up. So do the people who are here in this church today, and there are about 250 to 300 people attending the ceremony, have they all come from the hotels where they've been lodged? Have they all become refugees?
Most of them went to Dubrovnik, of course, as a natural center and as a town to which all the area was always oriented. And when the area was liberated, our first thought was to reconstruct some hotels in Safet, which is very near, which is the center of the Carnival area. They are staying now, you've seen the hotel Albatros, for example, in Safet and in other hotels, and they are working in the area, in their homes.
How is the economy surviving? What has now happened?
This is one of the problems, because everybody and everything in Dubrovnik and the Dubrovnik area is related to the tourism. Even though this area is agricultural area mostly, of course the market for their products was always Dubrovnik, mostly Dubrovnik. It is true, the second market was Sepset Novi on the Montenegrin coast. And they've lost both. On the other hand, they can produce for themselves and for the small home economy. Some of the people from the Carnival era are still receiving humanitarian aid. And we are looking forward to the tourists to come back here and to allow us to live normal life again and to produce for ourselves, not to receive humanitarian aid.
The village of Tilipi housed its own ethnographic museum. That too was burned. I asked museum's curator, Marina Desin, what Tilipi was like before the war.
It was a kind of a leading show and the only presentation of cultural historical heritage through that talk show that we had every week, every Sunday morning and Tuesday. How did it look like before? It was just beautiful, everything. We had a museum there and I run the whole program and the small museum through which we tried to present and preserve in the same moment cultural historical heritage, the ethnographical museum of the region.
So what happened to the museum now? Has it been physically destroyed? And what happened to the artifacts that were in the museum?
Now the museum is the ruin as much as all surrounding buildings are ruined and devastated by fire and before being burned down, looted and dropped. The exhibits from the museum, fortunately, have been saved on time, evacuated on time. Those which were of the biggest importance, dealing with the national costume, with the beautiful embroidery, with some jewelry from the region, with paintings, and with all kinds of utensils which did have a kind of artistic value, we've been lucky enough that they did not discover the shelter. All those things have been packed quite well and put in the shelter before the war. But we are still very, very lucky that aside of having all the furniture burned down, as much as happened to all the houses, because you have to know your whole surrounding houses or the family homes in Konavle have existed there for a couple of hundreds of years. And all the natural and the normal setup and the scenery in their homes was of a certain value. The furniture and the paintings and the pictures and the national costume and everything what they had. So also, aside from the furniture that was burned down in the museum, we are still having a collection that is saved. And now this is displayed, this is in Sapsak also in a temporary exhibition with which we try to tour around and show with pictures how it looked before, how it was devastated and what our future projects are. future project is, to just to give the same purpose to the same building of the museum and same life as before. Maybe change, maybe even some different presentation. Still, it belongs there.
Does the museum have a great deal of interaction with the villagers? Has that always been the case?
I have the villagers asking me when are they going to build the museum again, because it grew with them. In all the presentation, it is a part of themselves, and especially because the museum there was presented a part of their family home. Most of the people did give donation out of what they possessed into that museum for the exhibit. I think that in a complete renewal and reconstruction, we have to start also from the museum, which is important as much as every other building in which we give certain purpose. For the museum did not represent only, let's say, a simple and superficial exhibition, but it was a place where we experience something from our past, where we are going to record this time. And then we are going to also to give a certain input into our future.
In a total of 16,000 refugees or displaced persons in the Dubrovnik area, the educational needs of thousands of additional children have to be met. Ratomir Kvaternik is the country coordinator of UNESCO's program SHARE, which stands for Scheme for Humanitarian Assistance for Refugee Education. He spoke to us about efforts to meet these special needs.
The situation here is different because the number of refugees, the number of displaced is enormous. There was neither time nor possibility from the side of Croatia to provide such educational assistance to the refugees and organized assistance to the refugees. The refugee children could not attend school because all the schools were either destroyed or the existing schools were so overcrowded that no more refugees could be accepted. We tried to ease this problem in some cases by reconstructing the school, and this is exactly the case here in Chilipi. It's not only that this influences the children, but it influences also the return of the displaced and the refugees back to their villages.
The differences between people have been so accentuated, building up walls within their heads. So how does the breaking down of these walls take place?
This is one of the major difficulties, of course. How to break those walls of fear, walls of hatred. From my point of view, it cannot be done very quickly. Education itself is an ongoing process. You cannot restore it as a building. You have to work on it for several years. And this is where we come in, and this is where we would like the others to understand this importance. Importance of this aspect of education.
Post-war reconstruction means different things to different people. It includes an entire range of tasks, reconnecting interrupted water supplies, rebuilding rail and road networks, reorganizing societies, or knitting together shattered individual lives. I asked Dino Milinovic, the Secretary General of UNESCO's National Commission for Croatia, what the priorities were for Dubrovnik.
Well, the first issue is somehow to get all those people back. There's some 8,000 of them left in the hotels that are displaced and living in the hotel for the third year now, which means that local government and the central government in Zagreb have to do everything to get these people back. Now here I'll start talking as the Secretary General of the UNESCO Commission, because what we're concerned with was at the beginning the old city, which is on the World Heritage List and which has received quite a lot of attention from UNESCO ever since the heaviest month of bombardment, heaviest days of bombardment here, and then some UNESCO experts, two UNESCO experts were here even during the worst days of shelling of the city. So UNESCO has been present from the beginning, and the result of this has been the plan of action, which was the booklet published in two parts, drawing attention to the a general outline, basically, of the city of Dubrovnik, its characteristics historically and geographically, and a detailed description of damages inside of the old walls. Then, of course, there was other concrete action, like a roof tile that UNESCO has provided for the city, some 200,000 roof tiles, which, of course, was the first priority at the time when the reconstruction had begun, putting back roofs so that you know, the state of the objects in this area, right? And these were, of course, the heaviest damages in the city as well. And I think this is drawing to an end. This part of the activity sponsored by UNESCO is drawing to an end, and I think by now that most of the roofs in the old city have been repaired. And we're concentrating more and more on the villages outside of Dubrovnik because we think there's another dimension to it. And this dimension, of course, applies very much to what we usually call the sustainable development. What do you do to get people back in their villages if it's a viable region, able to feed the city and the tourists that will come back? And we want to somehow to bring people back. This is a strategically important thing for the region of Dubrovnik. If we don't bring these people back, I mean, all the life is going to be concentrated along the coastline and the hinterland is going to slowly die out. We can't let it happen. This is one of the richest regions in the nation, and it has known a traditionally well-founded style of life throughout centuries. We want to somehow preserve the traditional kind of way of life that has been very characteristic of this region.
Dubrovnik has friends all over the world. Help has come pouring in from different quarters, and associations have been formed to raise funds through cultural events, exhibitions, and charity shows. But many of these efforts are uncoordinated and often lead to a waste of time and energy. Lucia Bonzan, who has set up one such association in Milan, in Italy, is of the opinion that there should be just one single coordinating body to help Dubrovnik.
Now, I thought that if there was some sort of coordination between all those who want to help Dubrovnik, it would be much better for Dubrovnik and for themselves, in that if one puts together an exhibition in London, you can run that same exhibition in Madrid or in Rome or wherever with the only expense of doing perhaps an extra translation, which is a little effort compared to putting on one whole exhibition. And I also think that if people, such protagonists of Aid Dubrovnik, were to communicate with each other, there would be cross-pollination of ideas, because we now live in a global village, don't we? And therefore, information about an international institution that you have in Washington may help to do something in Rome. Not only that, but I think that for those in Dubrovnik, it would be easier if those who want to help were somehow better connected between them, because in that way, you would be able to avoid that two events are organized to help the same thing. I do think that if we could put together all the well-meaning organizations and people who want to do something, find a single name so that you would have one same name repeated so many times, it of course has a different echo and a different depth to it, we would do something useful. And may I take advantage of this opportunity to say, whoever is listening and has an interest to help, or interest to even just know about it, to write to this address that we have established, Vita Nova, VITNOVA, meaning New Life, care of Hotel Excelsior, Dubrovnik. It's simple for everybody. Anyone who has an idea or a thought which could be of help could write it. We need friends, we need people with vision, with fantasy, because Dubrovnik just has to build itself a new life.
That was Dubrovnik Redevision, a time for peace. Prepared and presented by Vajna Ratni and produced by Aaron Faraday at UNESCO in Paris.